Good morning. Welcome to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and today we're going to talk about colorectal cancer. My guest is Nancy McGathan. She is a registered nurse. She is the health education provider at Columbia Memorial Hospital, specializes in breast and colorectal health, and is here. We're going to talk about screening and cutting down rates of colorectal cancer. So good morning, Nancy.
Good morning, Ann. Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about what's a big deal.
Well, it's a big deal because it's one of the cancers that we can prevent. So I'm pretty passionate about that since years ago my dad died of colorectal cancer back in New York when he was 67, and he had never had a colonoscopy. So as a result of that, our family history, all of us get colonoscopies on a regular basis, starting earlier than someone with an average risk. We're all now in our 60s and doing well, and three out of the four of us had precancerous polyps that were removed. So it's just so important to get the word out that a colonoscopy can take a little polyp out prior to it becoming cancer and prevent this disease.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we know is that chronic irritation in the colon from whatever, from lousy eating, from food you're allergic to, whatever, any kind of, you know, irritation causes a proliferation of cells in the intestines. And most of the time it happens in the colon. And that is a polyp. And if it keeps growing and nobody notices it, they turn into cancer. And
That's correct.
And the numbers of colon cancers in the United States is a huge number. You have some numbers there.
Yes, the American Cancer Society estimates that 142,820 people will be diagnosed this year, and 50,830 will die from the disease in the United States.
And the kicker is, you don't have to die from it.
That's exactly right, Anne. And what you just so accurately described about the growth of cancer from a normal cell in the colon takes many years, several years. And we know that 80% of the colon cancers are in people over 50, men and women equally. So that if we start colonoscopies when you're 50, you can find those polyps way before they turn cancerous.
Mm-hmm.
And they're prevented.
Right.
And that's it.
Now, for the majority of people who have a polyp or have colon cancer, they may have no symptoms.
That's
so this
exactly
is one of the
right.
things like high blood pressure. You don't necessarily have a symptom to have a problem.
That's right, and that's why colorectal cancer is called the silent killer.
Mm-hmm.
It is the second leading cause of cancer death, and it's silent because by the time we have symptoms, which bleeding, bloating, loss of weight, fatigue for no reason, the cancer is spread to other parts of the body.
Right, and frequently liver, difficult. Lymph nodes,
that's
lungs.
Correct. That's right.
Yeah, and then the prognosis is not very good.
And, you know, that's exactly true. In early stage cancers that we can find, again, through colonoscopies, if it's not prevented, but we find an early stage cancer, up to 98% can be treated. But late stage is very poor. Low, 2, 3, maybe 10%. Can be treated successfully.
And successfully
it's
means
ironic,
surviving 5 years. Isn't that what success means?
I guess, depending on what expert you might ask on that. But so it's just ironic, isn't it, that you can prevent it by this simple finding it early, and yet once it's late, the treatment and the treatability of the disease is very poor.
Right.
So I just passionate to put those two things in the same sentence.
Right.
Preventable, hard to treat at a late stage.
Well, you know, there's prevention and there's prevention. You're talking about a prevention through screening, not letting a problem get out of hand. But then there's prevention, which is like not have it at all. And that's something that I ponder because I didn't have colon cancer.
Yes.
I had small small bowel cancer, and that was picked up last summer, that was fairly late. It was in some lymph nodes. Mm-hmm. So it was already out. And I had plenty of symptoms. And every doctor I went to thought I had an ulcer, I was stressed mm-hmm. out, I was, you know, anything but having cancer.
Yeah,
so when I
yeah.
got my the pathology report from after I had the surgery, which was for an obstruction of I didn't know what, I was completely surprised. Mm-hmm. Now, what I had was very uncommon. There may be 100 cases in the United States versus colon cancers. There's 100 cases a day, a minute, you know, there are thousands. And the studies that have been done that give us the statistics on survival are all done on colon cancer because there's such a large pool. There's a lot of research going on in that. Mm-hmm. There's no research going on small bowel tumor, but it's mm-hmm. the same cell type. Adenocarcinomas from those same cells, mm-hmm. mucus-making cells in the lining of the gut. Yeah. And it behaves the same way.
Yeah, well, that's why these that are well recognized, well documented, well studied, mm-hmm. we can tell you how to prevent, how early screening can do. And we've seen, the data will show us, we've seen over the years that in Oregon, our screening rate has increased somewhat. And this is any kind of screening, colonoscopies, sigmoidoscopies, or the fecal occult blood test. There are different ways of screening for this. Mm-hmm. That has increased over the years, and we've seen a decrease in the deaths from cancer of the colon. However, that's only to say that we're up to 50 or 60% screening. And our Healthy Families Initiative wants us to be up to 80% of screened people over the age of 50.
Well, I'll tell you when that number is going to go up. It's going to go up in 2014 and 2015 when it's mandated to have health insurance. Because what happens is now, if a person is either underinsured or does not have health insurance and their doctor says you need a colonoscopy and they say, how much is it? And the doctor says, I don't know. And so they they find out that it's $3,000 or more.
Right.
They go, well, I don't have it. So then they don't do it.
Right.
When everyone is covered for that kind of a, you know, that it's like pap smears used to not be covered. Pap smears are now covered. Yeah. When the colonoscopy is a prevention screening service that is paid for by all insurances starting in 2014 with polyp removal when they're found, mm-hmm. We will be over 80%.
Well, I think it's important to know that we've taken steps towards that with the United States Preventive Health Task Force has stated, then recommended, that over 50 people should have a colonoscopy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a recommendation from that task force. And as a result of that, also if a patient has a polyp that needs to be removed during that still stays a screening exam.
Oh, right. That was the other
thing. Right. It does not become a diagnostic exam and then the patient has to pay for it. No. If the screening exam, patient goes in for a screening exam as recommended by the task force, that stays a screening exam even if a polyp is removed.
Right. Because currently patients get, you had a polyp removed, so therefore it's a treatment.
And that has been, most recently looked at, worked on, and in the legislature now for Medicare patients. They are working on that. Medicare is still not totally sure on that issue, but other than that.
And it's crazy because
money is certainly a barrier to this exam.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other barriers, people have misconceptions about colonoscopies. They think that you're wide awake. No, you're not awake when you have the exam.
Well, you can be awake.
If they do a virtual colonoscopy, you can with x-rays, which is a fairly new type thing, and at this point I don't believe it's paid for. But a sigmoidoscopy, which is examining only part of the colon, is done in an office, mm-hmm. and there's no sedation.
Mm-hmm.
Colonoscopies are done in a clinic or in our hospital day surgery department. Patient is fully sedated. You're not awake during this. That's one of the reasons people are afraid that they're going to be uncomfortable, they're going to be awake. Another misconception is they don't like the prep. Well, the prep is simply laxatives, mm-hmm. the afternoon or evening before, and possibly in the morning, just before the morning exam. Mm-hmm. So you take a laxative. You know what's going to happen. You're healthy and well when you do it. The bowel is cleaned out. The next morning is your procedure if you have an early morning exam. The procedure is in a clinic where you have light sedation. The exam is possibly 20 minutes, maybe 45 minutes max. The sedation wears off quickly, and you're out in the by noontime.
So can you drive then after that?
No, they want you to have a person to drive you home. Mm-hmm. However, a person can go back to work in the afternoon.
Oh,
so there again, people are afraid, I'm going to lose a whole day of work. I can't mm-hmm. do that. Well, find out from your physician how long you have to wait before you can go back. But you walk out of the hospital, you're alert, a little bit sleepy perhaps, but you could go back to work in the mm-hmm. afternoon. Mm-hmm. And the laxatives, again, you know you're going to take them, you know what's going to happen, and you're not sick like with the flu when you have that kind of
thing. Well, you know, and the irony is a lot of people have reported to me that they hadn't felt that good in years. You know, getting a good clean. A lot of Americans are constipated. So, like, it's a cheap way to
feel good the next
to clean
day.
Out. And yeah. also, it's amazing how much crud you can accumulate in there. Yeah. I've yeah. had people say they lost 5 pounds doing the cleanse to get ready for a colonoscopy.
Well, and the other surprise, Anne, is, too, it takes, sometimes we'll say, oh, I just don't want this procedure for all the things we've just said, all the barriers. And then, okay, my husband wants me to do it, or my wife, my doctor's demanding that I do it. I have heard many, many say, you know, I went, I did the exam, they found a polyp. I never thought I would have a polyp. I don't have any family history. Well, that's right. 80% of the colon cancers don't have family history. Boy, am I glad I went. And if you don't do it for yourself, do it for your grandchildren, your own children, your husband or your wife, or your friends.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, that.
Well,
take
you know,
care.
When I had my cancer removed, next to it was a polyp, which they also, I mean, they were resecting a chunk of my small intestine. There was the beginning of number two.
Yes. Oh, good.
And so, it's like, oh, there's the progression.
Yes.
There's the polyp, there's the tumor right next to each other.
Yeah.
And definitely, a colonoscopy would not have detected what I had because it isn't in the colon.
It doesn't go in the small,
right. But a CAT scan would have.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that nobody ever recommended, and I never thought of it either. I mean, I have to accept responsibility that I didn't take care of it.
Well, those are difficult to find in the small bowel.
They are harder. Mm-hmm. And again, the symptoms aren't. So you have to rely on testing rather than that.
Well, and there was one other thing I wanted to mention. We talked about money being a barrier. If there are listeners out there,
wherever they are,
who are have symptoms or have a very strong mother, father, brother, sister history of colon cancer, I urge them to contact us at Columbia Memorial Hospital and ask for Nancy McGathan. And I'd like to talk to that person, see if we could get you some assistance.
Right. There. So there's
high risk people we like to know about ahead of time if we can help in any way. And there are some assistances out there that we can try to get.
Wonderful. Okay, we'll talk more about that. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. My guest is Nancy McGathan. She is health educator at Columbia Memorial Hospital, and we were talking about colorectal health. We'll be right back. We're back. My guest is Nancy McGathan. You are listening to Your Health, and we are talking about colorectal health. And when we left, you said that there are some, for people that are high risk for having colon or rectal cancer, there actually is some, scholarships?
Well, what I could say is that we'll try the best we can to find some for them. There mm-hmm. are different agencies around. Some assistance that we can look for.
And, you know, they may qualify for the FMIP or the OMIP, the federal or the Oregon, depending on, you know, they may not even know that they qualify for some help.
And the thing, too, the legislation is changing so quickly, and different places do different things. Just don't give up.
Right.
If you're having symptoms, if you're having rectal bleeding, or if you know that your family is high risk for this, There are some family diseases, syndromes that make you high risk for colorectal cancer, mm-hmm. as well as just the fact that it runs in the family. Familial polyposis, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. Those things make you higher risk for this disease. Let's hear about it. Please mm-hmm. give me a call if we can do anything to help you. Columbia Memorial Hospital wants to do that.
That sounds great. Well, you know, one of the symptoms that I've seen repeatedly that is the only symptom is being tired and like being unable to do normal activities like taking a walk or, you know, going up a hill or doing, you know, cutting wood. And if you've normally been able to do stuff and suddenly you can't do stuff, that might be your only sign that something's wrong. And you would think, well, maybe I have a problem with my lungs or maybe I have a problem with my heart. Maybe you have a problem with your colon.
That's right. Exactly.
And it isn't. And your doctor might not even think of that
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
maybe the doctor's thinking the same thing. Oh, you're running out of air. Your heart's insufficient.
Yeah.
Maybe it isn't.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not.
I think the older we get, we think, oh, well, this is just because I'm getting a little older. This is because I'm slowing down. And those things need to be ruled out before we say it's because we're getting older.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of times people accept horrible things that they shouldn't accept because of that.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah.
You're old now. You're an old lady. Well, like, I am not an old lady. Old lady. I mean, people will say that, oh, well, my back hurts because I'm old. I went, no, plenty of people's backs don't hurt when they're old. You know, no, it doesn't come with the territory. It's just what you have right now. Let's get rid of it.
I have to just a comment about that. You know, when I was just a young kid and my dad was dying of colon cancer at 67 years old, I thought to myself, I'm losing my father, and I was grieving my father, and isn't that was bad enough. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm in my 60s with four little grandchildren running around, I think how much he lost in years of life and memories with his kids, with his grandchildren, mm-hmm. all the work with his church, with his farming, with community events, time lost, life years lost with this disease. 67 was not very old. I might have thought back then it was old, but that's not old now when we look at all of this. And this is,
well, right.
ages over 50 is when this disease is happening.
Right.
So maybe young people with lots to give.
Although I know a woman who had colon cancer, I think in her 30s. Mm-hmm. She was very young. It's the youngest one that I know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she caught it early and, you know, has been fine. And I think it's been over 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it does happen in younger than 50, certainly.
Right.
And that's if it is familial, then colonoscopies are recommended far earlier than 50 years old. For us, we started at 40. So mm-hmm. The doctor would know that. There again, you need to tell a doctor your history. You think, I'm fine, I'm healthy, I don't need to ever go to a doctor. Well, let's look at history and prevention and how to stay healthy mm-hmm. and be healthy mm-hmm. rather than wait for something that I'm sick that's going to the doctor. The whole wellness emphasis in life now is so important. Health and wellness and staying healthy rather than looking for a disease or looking for a symptom before you take care of yourself.
Yeah, it's
quite
a
shift.
Yeah, it's a good shift, and it's a lot of people are having a hard time shifting that because, well, medicine is so disease driven.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really there yet. I mean, you know, when a doctor interests the patient in their mental health, their diet, their activity levels as the forefront of this is how you're going to maintain your health. And this is what we're going to do on the back end, you know, in case anything goes wrong, that the first thing we want to do is make sure you're doing everything you can
to
be
healthy.
Yeah. I think then we'll, because if you're a passive healthcare receiver,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be in much of a position to be leading the way with your own care, which is really health starts in your body.
Well, and I think this is a good time to emphasize how many things around our community, especially through the hospital that we have that are health-related. The hospital offers many wellness classes related to nutrition, related to exercise, Tai Chi, Reiki, all of massage, aromatherapy. It offers walks on the river walk with our cardiologist, Dr. Brinkovich. I mean, we are focused on keeping people well, and our educational programs certainly are an example of that.
And
but
so
look at all of their, excuse me, Anna, many of the businesses have wellness programs built into their business.
Well, absolutely. And certainly businesses know that their bottom line is better. They make more money when their employees aren't sick and dying, duh.
Yeah, you know? And they function better when they're on task,
right,
when they're working.
So if people want to find out about a class or some services that are wellness-related at the hospital, how do they do that?
They would call Columbia Memorial Hospital, 325-4321, and ask for the education department.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's easy enough.
We have lots of community education going on. And
right.
With our specialists within the hospital.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, I know there are also support groups for lots of different things.
Yes, there
you
are.
Know, teen, well, I think, is there a teen class with parents that have cancer? I mean, there was something like that.
We have a cancer support group now, and that's through the new oncology program with OHSU, the Cancer Center.
Mm-hmm.
And that cancer support group meets, and they're again called the hospital and ask for the time and day of those.
Mm-hmm.
There's an Alzheimer's support group that meets at the hospital, I believe. And but we would know about that and know where to send you if you
right.
need.
Yeah. I know there's a class on how to live with chronic conditions.
Yes. Thanks for mentioning that, since that's a big part of our work. Yes, that it's called Living Well, and it is a self-management program that is out of Stanford University. It's a very structured, organized, well-documented, evidence-based program that helps you to live with your chronic disease. Encourages step-by-step management, taking control of your life. An excellent 6-week course, and it's free. It's offered Seaside, Astoria, Warrington will be another one in July, and really encourage folks to come to that. It really helps you manage your life better.
Mm-hmm.
And another program that we have is called Powerful Tools for Caregiving, which helps the caregiver who cares for someone with these chronic illnesses. And
you know, if people aren't aware, being a caregiver is an incredibly taxing, tiring,
yes,
exhausting job that caregivers need lots of support.
Yes, they do. Oftentimes the caregiver puts all their attention to the person they're caring for and never takes time for themselves. And
sounds
the
like a
caregiver
mother
becomes yes
the caregiver becomes ill as well,
right? Exactly.
Yeah,
so it's our class again is a self-management class, how to take care of yourself when you're a caregiver.
That's great. That is great. So I just wanted to go back to colonoscopies for one moment and talk about what the doctor actually gets after the colonoscopy and what actually happens, right? They've got a camera in there.
Okay, yes. It's a person would check into the hospital an hour or two before their exam in the day surgery department of our hospital. They have an IV in their arm monitored with a nurse, and they go into the endoscope room, endoscopy suite, and they take an endoscope, pass it through the anus, up through the rectum, through the whole 22 feet or so of the large intestine, and examine it with a little camera. So they're actually looking with the eye at all the parts of the colon that may be exposed to cancer. And so after the exam, the doctor can tell you exactly what he or she saw, and what if there were polyps, if they were removed or not, so that you have some information when you leave.
And
if they're removed, then they're sent to the pathologist for examination.
And then you also, the doctor also gets pictures, right? There are pictures.
Yes, yes.
The pictures.
The doctor has pictures. He may even share those with you. See what your inside looks like from the outside.
And what's amazing is how pink it is.
Healthy tissue.
Very, yeah. It should be healthy pink tissue, which is great.
Yeah.
Most of the time people don't see that, but I want people to know that that's actually what you get.
You'll
the
be
doctor
able to
gets,
see that,
gets
yes.
pictures, and if you want to see, you can see.
Yeah. And yeah. Then the polyps are sent to a lab, to a pathologist to look at, and those results, the doctor will meet with you in his office to tell him that,
mm-hmm.
tell you about that.
Yeah, and hopefully they're not.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're awesome.
We have just a couple other things to say about colonoscopies to make them tolerable.
Drink heavily.
Well, several friends of mine have had different ways of doing this. Three women went up to Embassy Suites in Portland. All three of them had their colonoscopies one after another up there and stayed overnight at Embassy Suites, did the little laxative trit-trots, and then had their exams, went out shopping that afternoon and to a movie at night and had a great time, encouraging one another. And that's really what's important here. We've done research in Oregon and know that if one person tells another about their experience, that is a very strong motivator for another person. So if you are listening and you've had a colonoscopy, please share that experience with others and encourage others to get their colonoscopy done. We had three, four nurses over at the hospital who, again, encouraged each other to go, drove up to where they were having it done, and went together one after another, and someone drove them home and encouraged each other together, whereas probably I wouldn't have done it if I didn't get all that encouragement. So we do have to work together to take care of one another.
Absolutely, yeah. So get together with your friends and make sure that everybody's taking care of each other. Thank you very much, Nancy.
You're welcome. It's been delightful.
Yes.
And I hope that our delightful talk has encouraged people to look into this exam and be realistic with your life. Take good care of yourselves.
Absolutely. It's such a painless way to just have a look. And if it's normal, awesome, you're free.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
Great.
Right.
You've been listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I've been with Nancy McGathan. She is a health education specialist at Columbia Memorial Hospital. And you can contact her at 503-325-4321 and just ask for her.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back later.